So continuing an exploration, a reflection on the teaching of dependent origination. In the last few weeks, talking about conditioning in general, and then a little bit more elaboration on this particular teaching of conditioning. The Buddha spoke about this set of conditions that describes how we get caught. Basically, dependent origination, or sometimes translated as dependent co-arising, which is actually closer to what the Pali actually means. I like that translation, dependent co-arising. What are the conditions with which suffering comes to be? So it is the Buddha's kind of elaboration on how we get stuck, how we get caught. It's a pretty complex teaching, as I've been saying. There's 12 links in this chain, or 12 different conditions that kind of circle around each other and influence each other. And there is a kind of a way in which one conditions another or influences another, but there's more loops and cycles and dependencies in this chain. We'll explore that a little bit today. But just to recap a little bit about some of the basic patterns that we can be really familiar with and that we can see pretty easily in our experience. What this is describing, experience. It's not a theoretical model. It is really based on my understanding, based on the Buddha's looking into his own mind and recognizing, oh, when there's this that arises in the mind, this tends to follow. And when this arises, that follows. In fact, he expressed the basic teaching of conditionality as, when this is, that is. When this arises, that arises. When this isn't, that isn't. When this ceases, that ceases. And then he describes some specific things that happen in our minds and bodies that tend to happen in our human system, in our human experience. This describes a very natural, in a way, human way to get caught in suffering. And so we started in the exploration by just looking at, we have a body and mind, and this is one of the links in the chain. Mentality, materiality, it's called. So we have these mental and physical processes, and within these mental and physical processes, we have our sense bases. We have sense organs, sense receptors. That's another link in the chain, the six sense bases. We have sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and our mind. Our eyes receive sight, our ears receive sound, and so on. And so we have these mental and physical processes and these sense bases. And with these sense bases, our sense bases receive the world. This is this next link in the chain is called contact. So there's contact with our sense bases. The eye receives sight, the ear receives sound. This is pretty familiar to us at this point, so it's not describing anything too exotic right now. So we have the body and mind, there's eyes and nose, and there's sights and smells, and when there's the contact, there's the experience of a sight or a sound. Now it starts getting a little bit more into the processes of mind at this point. And so with that contact, with every single contact, the Buddha highlights that with that contact, there's a particular flavor that happens of whether the experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant, neutral experience. So sight will be pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Sound will be pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. What arises in our mind, thoughts, will be pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Emotions, will be pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Every single contact with our senses is said to have this feeling tone. We can begin to get familiar with that, and we talked about that in the last few weeks, that there's a, you know, we can start to recognize that there's the truth to this, that each experience has this feeling tone. So that's the next link in the chain. With contact as condition, feeling tone arises. The next link is with feeling as condition. This is where it starts to move in the direction of habits of mind and moves in the direction of how we start to get caught. With feeling as a condition, craving tends to arise. When something's pleasant, we tend to like it, we want more of it. We want to get it. When something's unpleasant, we tend to not like it. We want to get rid of it. So this is craving, this kind of movement towards or movement away. It can be as subtle as liking or not liking, or as obvious or strong as hatred or lust. So based on the feeling tone, there tends to be this movement towards or away. This is very human. In fact, it's very life-oriented. I mean, most living creatures have this kind of push-pull around pleasant, unpleasant. It seems to be just automatic, like it's hardwired into us. And it may well be hardwired into some creatures. Single-celled creatures, in fact, you know, may not have a lot of choice about moving towards what is experienced as pleasant and moving away from what's experienced as unpleasant. It may be more automatic. Within our system, there's a little bit more mechanism that allows for choice. And this is actually the mechanism in our human system that allows for choice is why freedom is possible. So we have this movement towards or away, pleasant or unpleasant, that's very habitually conditioned in us as human beings. That tends to lead to, you know, craving or holding on to things that we like, pushing away things that we don't like. So there's an intensification of the wanting or not wanting. And when we actually get something, hold on to it, or kind of feel like we've figured out how to control it, there's this movement of all these intentions and inspirations and actions to maintain control of that thing or that experience. So this is the next place in the chain. This is called becoming. So from the craving leading to clinging, when there's clinging or kind of grasping or picking something up, then there's a whole bunch of kind of intentions and actions that, as one teacher, Sanasaro Bhikkhu, says, intentions and action rally to serve that clinging. There's this kind of movement to, okay, how can I keep this? How can I maintain this? That's becoming. And then from that becoming, there can be a kind of more full-blown identification with, this is mine, this is my thing, this is who I am, I figured out how to be this thing, and I'm going to be this, I have this. And so there's the kind of real strong, so the clinging is strong, and then the identification is also strong around what we have clung to. With both the clinging and the identification, because of the nature of the world, because of the nature of all experience as impermanent, as unreliable, there will be suffering that follows when we have clung to something and when we have identified with something. There will be suffering that follows. And this is the next piece in the chain. The suffering that follows as there is decay, as there is the aging and death of that kind of identity, that birth into that identity, as things fall apart, there is suffering that follows. And so this is the, okay, we can start from what we recognize, just contact and sense experience, and begin to trace how we get caught, and in particular get caught in the craving and the clinging and the identification with having to control, having to hold on to what we have. And we may be able to begin to recognize that clinging or that controlling is because of the nature of experience as impermanent, as unreliable, the identification thinking, I have control, I can make this reliable, is destined at some point to prove not true. And we will suffer. There will be a struggle, there will be dissatisfaction, there will be frustration, there'll be confusion, there'll be all kinds of emotional responses. So suffering will arise. So that's about two-thirds of the chain of dependent origination. And I started this exploration a third of the way into the chain. I mentioned this when we first started talking about it, that the first four links of the chain are kind of not the easiest place to start in terms of describing the processes at work here. But at this point, I'd like to go back and look at those first four links and see how they connect to the entire pattern of what happens for us as we struggle. So the first link in the chain is said to be ignorance. Now, also to remember this chain, it's described as a chain sometimes, that this conditions this, but it's also described as a cycle. And so it can be helpful to recognize or remember that the link of ignorance, it doesn't just come out of nowhere. It is conditioned also. And it tends to be conditioned by suffering. Suffering tends to condition ignorance. Ignorance is tending to the definition of ignorance in the Buddhist psychology is basically not understanding suffering, not understanding the Four Noble Truths. The definition of ignorance is not knowing about suffering, not knowing about the arising of suffering, not knowing about the ending of suffering, and not knowing about the way leading to the ending of suffering. And so it is suffering itself. You know, when we don't understand suffering, suffering will kind of propel us into responding and reacting in kind of habitual ways. The Buddha said that when suffering arises, it tends to lead to one of two responses. Either confusion, ignorance, why me, what's going on, why is this happening to me, the confusion side, the lack of understanding of how suffering is conditioned, we tend to take it personally. We tend to identify with it. So there's that kind of confusion that can arise with suffering. And the Buddha says that's one response. Or the other response is search for a way out of suffering. And that is a possibility for us, actually. And we'll get to that side of things in a few more weeks in terms of exploring conditioning, because there can be conditions where in that space of suffering, when there is suffering, if the mind is curious about, is there a different way to respond than just these same old habits of thinking, you know, what to do about suffering, or my usual habits of engaging, if there's is there some other way? And the Buddha is said to have reflected on this. Does somebody know a way or two out of this suffering? And that kind of began his search, his inquiry. And so the possibility, if that suffering is met with that curiosity and a teaching, a kind of a teaching that points the way, then it may lead us in a completely different direction, not just back into this same old habit of same old chain of reactivity. But typically, or maybe before we meet the Buddhist teachings for sure, when we meet suffering, we tend to respond to suffering in the way that we always have responded to suffering. How can I get rid of this? What's gone wrong? What can I do to fix this? What can I get that's pleasant? What can I get rid of? And so there's some basic, basic based on not understanding suffering with ignorance, we tend to with the with n when we don't understand how suffering comes to be, that it is conditioned, that it is created by this whole pattern of grasping and clinging and identifying, we tend to grasp and cling and identify in order to try to get rid of suffering. And so it tends to perpetuate those patterns and habits. And so with ignorance as a condition, the next link in the chain is mental formations come to be. Basically, habits and patterns of mind that we have learned through our experience, we've learned through our conditioning, our cultural conditioning, our familial conditioning, how to navigate the world. We don't just create these mental formations out of our own lack of understanding suffering. It's lack of understanding suffering that's passed on through generations. And so we tend to often respond to suffering in the same way that our families did, or in ways that our culture supports. And so this is, the ignorance, in some ways, the ignorance is not just our own ignorance. It's the ignorance that we've inherited through the conditioning of our human experience. This is a big thing that we could unpack a little bit more. And maybe we will in a few more weeks, but I want to try to get through these four links. So we have the ignorance of suffering, of how suffering works, and the whole set of patterns and habits that are shaped that we have learned to deal with suffering. And those are the mental formations. Those are how we tend to respond based on not understanding suffering. So this, the ignorance of not understanding suffering is essentially the, we could call it the root, maybe the root condition that, and this is why I think it's at the head of the chain, it's the root condition that when ignorance is happening, when we don't understand how suffering unfolds, the rest of the chain is going to happen. And so, if there is ignorance about suffering arising when there's a feeling tone, when a pleasant feeling arises with the co-condition of ignorance, that will lead to craving. So the craving, I mean, feeling tone does not have to lead to craving. But when ignorance is present, when we don't understand how the craving will lead to suffering, we don't understand how the suffering is created, when that ignorance is present, feeling tone will lead to craving. And so it's like the when ignorance arises, this entire chain just comes along with it. And so ignorance is like the co-arising phenomenon along with everything in this chain. That means suffering will arise. And so it's kind of, this is a pointer to, again, how do we begin to find a different way out? And it is through understanding suffering. It's no accident that this is the very first action that the Buddha pointed to in the Four Noble Truths. He pointed to there, you know, suffering happens. And what should we do about that? He said, suffering should be understood. And that will help to poke holes in the confusion and the ignorance, the delusion around how happiness comes to be and how suffering comes to be. So these mental formations, the habits and patterns that have been shaped by our families, by our conditioning, by our cultures, by news media, by all of the things that shape us, advertisements, encounters on the playground when we were children, all of these things shaping us. With the not understanding how suffering works, those mental formations tend to be of the variety of wanting, they tend to be of the variety that are based in greed, aversion, and delusion. They tend to have the flavor of craving. And so this is a place where there's a kind of an overlap between pieces of the chain. Mental formations is the second link in the chain. With ignorance as condition, mental formations come to be. Most of the other pieces of the chain are also mental formations. Craving is a mental formation. Clinging is a mental formation. Ignorance tends to condition craving and clinging as mental formations. And so with ignorance as a condition, these habits and patterns, you know, we can think of this as the kind of the bigger habits and patterns, the habits and patterns that come in through our culture, through history, through the major kind of conditioning, as opposed to with feeling tone, a particular craving arising. So that's how I think of the mental formations here, is kind of the habits and patterns that we have acquired from our conditioning. And so with those mental formations as a condition, the next link in the chain is said to be consciousness comes to be. Now, this one is a little bit harder to unpack, but I'm going to unpack it in this way. Based on whatever kind of habits and patterns are arising in my mind, in whatever kind of is shaping the mind. It could be anger, it could be frustration, it could be, you know, a habit or a tendency, it's kind of like underlying tendencies towards particular flavors of response. It also includes, the mental formations also include belief, what we believe, what we think about the world. And so these, all of these things shape what we take in, what our consciousness actually meets. This is not obvious to us. We think of our senses and the consciousness that we're getting as kind of being like cameras and microphones. It's just recording what's actually happening. But our system is much more active than that. And so when we have particular beliefs or views, or when a particular kind of flavor of a mind state is arising, and maybe anger or frustration is arising, it acts like a filter on our consciousness. We will tend to receive in consciousness things that are attuned to or in line with that mind state, attuned to or in line with that belief, attuned to or aligned with that emotional response. And so with an emotional response, if we're angry, for instance, we tend to look at things that kind of are resonant with that anger. We receive information that corresponds to that kind of attitude of mind. There are studies done about this in psychological research. Sometimes this is called confirmation bias. You know, what we believe, we tend to see things that confirm that. And we actually tend to not see things or not take in information that disconfirms our biases. There's another phrase in psychological research called selective attention. This is a little more neutral. That basically, if we have some kind of an agenda going, a focused attention on some particular aspect of our field of experience, there are studies done that show that when you're attuned to a particular task while watching a video, you may not see something really obvious in that video. There's a famous story, a famous study of asking people to watch how many times a basketball passes between players in a white shirt and count the number that you're told that's the task. And during that process, during that video, a person in a gorilla suit walks out onto the floor and kind of dances around among the basketball players for a little while and then walks off. And many of the people do not see the person in the gorilla suit. That's selective attention. It's actually functional for us. You know, while we're trying to accomplish a task, to be distracted by a gorilla, a person in a gorilla suit, we wouldn't be able to accomplish the task. So that's a kind of a neutral way to understand how this filtering works. But it is not, I mean, it is useful to understand that our minds work this way because, you know, some number of the people in that study, I read a kind of an elaboration of this study at one point, and it said that some percentage of the people who did not see the gorilla, when shown the video back again, didn't say, huh, that's interesting, I completely missed the gorilla. They said instead, that has to be a different video because I would have seen the gorilla. That's the power of the belief of our mind that we see everything. And so it's really useful to understand that we are selective receivers. And that selectivity is based on these mental formations, the attitudes, the habits of our mind. So ignorance conditions our mental formations, which conditions what we take in consciousness, what we become conscious of. And then that shapes what we become conscious of with that mental formation, all of that. So that whole kind of package of the mind and what we become aware of, that tends to shape our other mental and physical processes. So if anger is present, for instance, in the mind, that tends to shape, that tends to, it may shape how our expression is. It may create heat and pressure in our body. So it'll shape our physical experience. It'll tend to orient the mind to looking at things to be angry about. It'll tend to orient the mind towards unpleasant experience. So it will shape our experience. It'll shape our body and mind. And so now we're back in the chain to the place where we have this body and mind, and we're receiving information with our senses. And we see this is not some neutral body and mind receiving just, oh, there's a sight, there's a sound. It's already shaped by a whole host of our conditioning, a whole host of our habits and patterns and proclivities and what we've been raised to think and believe. And so this is part of why this pattern of this cycle of suffering is so hard to see and to break out of. And yet it is not impossible to do so. We'll talk more about that next time, since we're at our time at this point.